Good day, everyone. I'd like to welcome you back to Confessions of Extraordinary Catholics. Today, I want to continue to talk about Dignitas Infinita, the declaration that was put out recently by the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith. It's a document that they've been working on for about 5 years, and I think it's very good in many ways. And today, I want to shift to one of the problems with this infinite dignity that's been given. We considered last time that this infinite dignity is grounded in the fact of creation, that God created us in His image. And God, who is infinite, who's all-powerful, who is God, who cannot be contained in any way, loved us enough to create us, and we are made in His image and likeness. And because of that, we have infinite dignity. The document states that very well in the first part of this document, but then it goes on to say that there are some ambiguities and contradictions. These ambiguities and contradictions are a result of freedom. It says that every individual possesses an inalienable and intrinsic dignity from the beginning of his or her existence as an irrevocable gift. Great statement. However, the choice to express that dignity and manifest it to the full or to obscure it depends on each person's free and responsible decision. This dignity is given to us, it's innate, it's given by God, but by our own choices, we can contradict this image in ourselves and in other people as we seek to control or to use them. We mar the image of God in them. And this document says that there are many different ways that this is done. And one of the fundamental ways is because of poverty. There's a section on the drama of poverty. And of course, many people don't think about that much, but many more people here in what was a pretty affluent America across the board, we had a larger middle class, many people are beginning to experience a little bit more of what poverty is. It reminds me of something that I heard just today with a young lady who had to move back in with her parents because her rent went from about $600 to over $1,200, this place she was renting, and she had no choice in the job she was working but to move back with mom and dad. Well, we can be thankful that mom and dad were still there for her. Or we read about older people because of onerous rents and the cost of living and medications are forced to live in their vehicles. And you can go to YouTube and look at all kinds of episodes of people who are essentially homeless here in America. And it's increasing. The drama of poverty has come here too. This document points out this drama of poverty and the prevalence of it around the world. And of course, in some areas, it's much worse than others. Take the country of Venezuela, for instance. Venezuela has poverty everywhere. There's no jobs. Many people are leaving Venezuela for neighboring countries like Colombia looking for work. They can't find work there either, so they migrate. They migrate up through Central America and eventually through Mexico, and they try to make their way to America, where hopefully they can find a job. And, of course, many Americans see this as a threat, too, to our own wealth and our own well-being. So there's going to be more and more of a conflict in this area. We're just beginning to experience the travail of that some. But it's very real. Poverty is very real. and we can feel it here too. But many countries feel it to a much larger extent than what we do. I just want to read a few statements concerning this section of the drama of poverty. It says, one of the phenomena that contributes significantly to denying the dignity of so many human beings is extreme poverty, linked as it is to the unequal distribution of wealth. So the question is, well, why should we care about that? This unequal distribution of wealth. I mean, what does that have to do with faith and the Bible and everything else that we have in our religion? Many would say, well, we shouldn't be care about that at all. So what? Well, that's one way to look at it. But another way to look at it is every human being is made in the image of God. And we have an obligation to every human being, no matter where they live, no matter what their background is, because they're made in God's image, they're our brother or our sister, and we have an obligation to them. Now, many don't see that as their obligation, but I think if you understand Scripture, or if you understand the teaching of the church, you can't avoid it. But when people pick and choose which parts of the Bible that they want to consider for themselves and ignore the rest of it, we can appease our conscience and not really think about these kinds of things. But this goes on to say the world's wealth is growing in absolute terms, but in inequalities are on the increase. Even in rich countries, some are getting much richer and many others are getting poorer. And we're certainly experiencing that here. The top class is growing in wealth. A disproportionate amount of wealth is going to those who are the lead at the top. And those at the bottom, there's a smaller piece of pie to go around. So why should we be concerned about it? It was Pope Francis that said, wealth has increased, but together with inequality, with the result of new forms of poverty are emerging. And we see it here. There's new forms of poverty all around us. The housing crisis I just spoke of, or food, being able to put food on the table, or medicine, many other things. As a result, poverty can take a variety of forms, such as an obsession with reducing labor costs with no concern for its grave consequences. So in capitalism, you want to increase profits as much as possible, no matter what the consequences are. So you have at the top many people who are being enriched, and at the bottom many people who are experiencing poverty. It says that one of the most recognized forms of poverty, and one of the worst kinds, is this poverty that takes away work and the dignity of work. That's happening all over America. In some countries, particularly those in South America and Central America and African nations, different places around the world, this dignity of work isn't there. So the migrants, they go somewhere to find work. And what do? Many times we want to turn them away, turn them back. And what alternatives do they have when they go back? And many times it's right to the gangs, or it's to abject poverty. That's the only thing that they have there. But why should we be concerned about those things? As a fundamentalist pastor in the Protestant realm, I didn't concern myself with world poverty too much. I didn't reflect on my own affluence and riches and consumption of material things. Didn't really consider that much. My thinking was, well, we preach the gospel. we tell people about Jesus. We want to see people come to faith in Jesus. We want to see people accept Jesus. In fact, I was taught, particularly in seminary, I still remember by one particular class that I had on biblical fundamentalism, that the emphasis was that there's a different gospel here in America. It's this gospel of what was characterized as works. There's people who, through works, through giving things to the poor, of addressing inequalities, they're trying to get to heaven by works. And we don't do that. We believe in faith and faith alone. We believe in salvation. So in a typical dichotomous thinking of faith versus works, we centered on faith and works was kind of left out. We didn't concern ourselves with those things. We didn't concern ourselves with much of the Old Testament concerning the plight of the poor and the need to give to orphans or widows or the need to give alms, or much of the teaching of Jesus Christ, what he said concerning the poor, or of the book of James, or what John had to say. It was faith and faith alone, faith without works. So they are concerned about works, the people that center on this, quote, social gospel. While we're the pure ones, we believe in a faith alone, and we're superior in some ways. I know that's not what was taught exactly, but that's pretty much the thinking in many fundamentalist circles. Having this opposition. It reminds me a lot of, too, what's happening today. You have in modernism that's crept into the church in many places, where, again, people want to pick and choose which parts of the Bible they want to apply. It's much like Marcion. He was the heretic back in the second century. Marcionism. Marcion was a monk who rejected the Old Testament law, and he claimed that the apostles were wrong in claiming that the New Testament was the fulfillment of the Old Testament. Marcion claimed that the teaching and the picture of Christianity needs to follow the Apostle Paul. And he changed the canon, essentially. I mean, he kind of wanted to pick and choose what parts of the canon would be, in his mind, part of what we should hold to as the church. So what he did was he completely rejected the Old Testament. He used just a portions of the Gospel of Luke, and rejected much of the rest of the New Testament, particularly the Sermon on the Mount. He held to the 10 letters of St. Paul, but the rest of the writers in the New Testament, including James and John in the New Testament, of course, he didn't want to hold to those things. And this is what he held to, that the principal doctrine of Christianity is wholly a gospel of love. So all we need is love. I guess if the Beatles were around at that time, it could have been his theme song. All you need is love. Da, 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 da. All you need is love. Love. Love is all you need. And this could be the theme song of many churches today, particularly of the Marcion modernist church, who like to pick and choose what parts of the Bible they want to hold to. Everybody likes to think of God being love, but then to turn to the destitute and love them with the love that God loves us with, we suddenly change our tune. Let's all go to Africa or to some of the starving countries around the world, and we'll have a concert. We'll sing some Beatles songs to them. We like John 3:16. Most of us know it very well. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. Whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. John 3:16. But how many know 1 John 3:16? Which says, this is the way we came to know love, that he laid down his life for us. So we ought to lay down our lives for our brother. And then you ask, well, who's my brother? Anyone in need. Someone asked that, and Jesus came up with his parable of the Good Samaritan. That's your brother, the one who's in need. That's how you know that you have the love of God, if you're willing to lay down your life for those in need. John goes on to say, if someone has worldly means and he sees a brother in need and refuses him compassion, how can the love of God remain in him? Children, let us not love in word or speech, but in deed and truth. You see, it's that deed and truth part that many people don't like now. We want to love God and say that he loves us, and we'll sing songs about it. But as far as doing something, and as far as believing the truth of what God says, that's a whole different story. Love cannot be separated from deed and truth. If it is, it becomes perverted. Compassion. Compassion for others. Dignitas infinita. It says there's no poverty worse than that which takes away work and the dignity of work. Both greedy capitalism and greedy socialism has done it around the world by maximizing profits or by the ruling class taking more than their fair share. And as socialism took over in different countries, we see it over and over again in South America, in Central America. We see it in Haiti. We see it in Nicaragua. We see it in Venezuela. There's a few people that are living very well. They're doing quite well in the name of socialism. But it's full of greed. The ruling class is full of greed. And I would like to say that our capitalism is so much better. But how is it that everyone, virtually everyone that goes to Washington, D.C. as a senator or a congressperson, when they get there, they make a relatively small salary, but they become millionaires? Who is paying the price for that? We are. Because they take the bribe from corporations or from the industrial military complex. It's we who suffer because of it. And that's only getting worse. And it's only going to get worse. So what's the solution? The solution gets back to seeing everyone as having dignity. Giving back to the people the dignity of work and making some of their own choices. Something that Haiti desperately needs. Something that many of our cities need right now. The dignity of work. Making some of their own decisions. Without it, you have chaos. Why is it there's so many young people that are joining gangs around the world? Because they don't have work, they don't have purpose, they don't have anything in their area, wherever they're living. All they have is the gang. Many times they come from broken homes, and there's a great need for something different in their own communities. But it's not going to be solved just by throwing more money at it. It's going to be solved by empowering them to make some of their own choices and to do something that will return dignity to their community. One of the ministries that we became aware of in Haiti, we get correspondence from now, is called Peace Cycle. I may have mentioned it on another podcast, but what Peace Cycle does is on Haiti, they have these water bags for drinking water that many people are given. And what happens with these water bags is people will, of course, drink the water and they'll just discard the bag, the plastic bag. And what Peace Cycle does is they go around and they collect these bags. They bring them back to a work site and they clean them up. And after that, they make different things out of these bags by sewing them together. And they're very nice bags. You can use them for like a beach bag, or there's different things they do with these things. And they're done quite well and they're very sturdy and sterile. But what's amazing with the ministry is they employ 20 indigenous people who take great pride in what they're doing. And what a contrast that is. Right now, they've been able to continue to function even though they have gunfire going on all around them. And one person I just read of, he bought a piece of property out of his money that he made there. And he wants to get married, but it happens he was going to build a house, but he can't because the place where he wanted to build is overtaken by gangs. But there's a point of light there. There's dignity. There's people who are working. That's what makes a difference. These people, they're menial jobs. They're washing bags and they're doing things, but it gives them a sense of purpose. Why is immigration happening? Most of them is because they want to work. They want to have the dignity of work. And that's part of the way we're built. Because we're made in God's image, we want to work, we want to create, we want to provide for ourselves, and it's a great gift of God. But it's people's freedom that they use to maximize profits or take advantage of people that causes these great tragedies around the world. This is just one of them. We're going to look at some others, but you know, that's a great ministry. If you if you're interested, you can look that up, Peace Cycle. If you look on, if you Google it, or if you look on Facebook, it'll pull up, and you can see some of the things that they provide. And again, all that money goes back to the ministry there. It goes back to give them some dignity in their work. And what a great thing they have going on. They're not only cleaning up the environment, they're taking things that are discarding them, that are discarded, they're upscaling them and creating something good. What a great concept. We need to do more of it. You know, places are beginning to realize that more. I know in the Protestant realm, Franklin Graham with Samaritan's Purse, there's a push in the organization to help fund certain projects. I remember one year what we did was we, instead of taking Christmas gifts, we wanted to have our family basically help support a project. A farmer, maybe you could give them some a milk cow or a few chickens to help them get started in doing something for themselves, work. Catholic Charities does the same thing. It's a great way to make a difference in people's lives. There's ways that we can recognize the need and look for ways to meet the need. It's all around us. It's everywhere. We just got to open our eyes to it and make a difference in the world. There's a great opportunities for it. We need to pray to continue to pray for the church. I know that our church, the Catholic Church, has a branch of dicastery that looks to the needs of the world and how to meet those needs. And we need to continue to pray for them. And around our own communities, there's great needs. They're all around us. We can see it. I know just at Walmart, I was talking to one of the gals who was checking me out not long ago. I mean, not checking me out, checking my things out. And we were just doing some chit-chat. And she had mentioned that she lived in a car. And the reason she lived in a car, because she couldn't make enough money to rent anywhere. So she worked at Walmart. And she lived in her car. And I came away from that thinking, hey, it is. It's everywhere. It's all around us. It's right here. We run into it every day. We just have to open our eyes to it. And to love people with the love of Jesus Christ that can make a difference in their lives. God has put people in your life too that you can love and make a difference in with His love. Thank you for being with me today. I hope you have a great day.